WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Cindy joins us on the line. How can we help? What's going on?
Yes, sir. Hey, listen, I'm going to be starting my new 401k at my employer next month. It's going to be with Nationwide Insurance. I've never had anything like that before. So I was just kind of curious are they going to, what they're going to be coming up with, what options. Right now I've got my main 401k that I rolled over to IRA Fidelity, and it's in a target date fund, which they want to manage. They keep asking me if they want to manage it for me, and I haven't done that yet. And I got about 50 in another old 401k that I haven't rolled over yet. 55, 56 now. So I'm just kind of curious about where they do not match this place. They do some type of defined pension contribution at times. I'm not real clear about that.
So your new plan, Cindy, they do not give you any sort of free match. Or is it just because you're new at the company and you have to wait a year before you get a match?
No, I've already done that.
Got it. So
getting ready to start it.
So the good thing about these any 401k plan, as long as the funds aren't expensive, the good thing is, Cindy, at least it lowers your taxes. So if you are making $60,000 a year and you put $10,000 into your 401k plan, then you're only paying taxes on $50,000. And that's good in a lot of different ways. It's great because it lowers your overall bracket. And that lowers your overall effective tax rate in general, so you pay less in taxes. And so that's a no-brainer. I think the question...
So where should I put it in? What do you think? What do you recommend?
Here's the question. If you were to give me a dollar figure, how much overall do you think you can save in the over the next year? How much money?
I mean, I'm going to try to put at least 20% in each paycheck.
But again, as a dollar amount, is that 10 grand total in a year? Is it 20 grand?
At least 10, 15.
Okay. That's important because there's all these different...
Well, I've only got 6 months left in the year, so for this year.
Well, but I want to think about this on the terms of, let's think 2016. Let's say you want to save 10 grand.
I would probably go more like 15, 18.
Oh, I like that. Okay. So here's how I would do it. If you're going to do $18,000, here's how I would break that up. I would go... First, because you had no match, I would do your Roth. All right. How old are you, Cindy?
55.
Okay, so you can do $6,500 into a Roth. All right. And then once you've done that, and I'm going to do a quick calculation here. You've got 18,000 minus 6.5. That leaves you with 11,500. And then you do the next 11,500 in your 401k plan. That's the hierarchy as far as your savings is concerned. And then So the 5,500, 6,500 in the Roth, then the next 11,500 in your 401k because you have room all the way up to 24,000. So then the question is, what do you do with that Fidelity account? Those Fidelity Freedom funds are okay. They are kind of expensive, Cindy, for a target date fund. So it would probably be a good idea to talk to them about some other options that may be lower cost options for you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Because I do like target mutual funds in general because it's a really good way to diversify and stay disciplined. Some of them, however, are a little bit expensive for what you're really getting. And that concerns me a little bit. If you're going to do a target fund, Cindy, then I would say you want to have your IRA at a place like Vanguard where you could do one of their target funds. It's really, really low cost. Otherwise, get some other ideas from your Fidelity advisor as far as lower cost options that might be more suited to you individually. Robert, how can we help? What's going on this morning?
Oh, hey, Wes, how are you? Great to talk to you. Love the show.
Good. What can I help with?
I've got a 401k, and I'm no longer working for the employer, but I'm not employed now, so I'm going to roll it over into my Schwab account. And I was wondering where I should put some of the money. I was looking at some of the high-yielding, like stocks or stuff like that, but with the Fed raising interest rates probably late this year. Everybody's saying the rate that the high yields may take a hit, and I was wondering, should I wait?
Yeah, so that I think that that's a so Robert, a couple of things. Where are you in the cycle? Are you how old are you? When are you going to retire fully? What's your situation?
I am 53, and I'm a full-time student. I went back to finish up my degree, so I'm a retired military. So do you have a
pension already right now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And
okay.
I also have a Roth IRA with Charles Schwab also.
So right now, are you starting to live? You're not. Well, since you're a student, are you living off any of your savings right now? Or are you able just to live off your pension?
I'm able to live off my pension and some of the VA. Because I get a check if I go to school full time. They will pay me. It's not a whole lot, but I get some income from going to school full time. So,
that's cool, so, Robert. What are you studying, by the way? That's cool.
Radiography.
Radiography, very cool. Well, my thought here is this: again, if you're able to do a rollover and you're going to just use your Schwab IRA. There, remember this, and this is part of what we've been talking about for many, many years, and particularly the last few months as interest rates have started to go up. They've gone from a little over 1.5% on the 10-year Treasury, which is a real barometer for rates, all the way up to almost 2.5%. So that's a really big rise in interest rates. That's a big move. And where we've seen what we've seen get hit is anything really interest rate sensitive. So on the stock side, you've seen utilities get hit, REITs get hit, because those are, to some extent, you own a utility company because you get a little bit of growth, but you really own it for the income. So it's a little bit more like a bond. It's much more, Southern Company or XLU, the utility ETF, is a lot more like a bond than owning Google, Amazon, Facebook, because you have this interest rate tied to it. Again, same thing with fixed income or bonds. You've got corporate and high yield bonds. Those are... You've got a 5.5% yield on HYG, which is the high yield bond ETF. There, when Treasury rates go up, that's more and more competition for that 5 to 6% that you get in high yield. So that's why you've seen a little bit of a ceiling on these interest rate sensitive areas, and actually a pullback in utilities. You look at utility stocks; they're down anywhere from 10 to 15% in price. Their dividends haven't changed. The cash flow hasn't changed. And now I think that we've had a temper tantrum, we've had a move higher in rates, and yes, the market is already anticipating the Fed, which controls only really short-term rates. We know that rates are going to go up on the short term. It's the rest of the marketplace and the rest of the world that dictates the rest of interest rates, 5-year, 10-year, 15, 20, 30-year interest rates. So we understand that the Fed is going to move short-term rates, but because the world's already anticipating the interest rates going up, that's why we've seen companies, utilities in particular, pull back. So I think that's a pretty interesting opportunity for people to look at. Utilities in the ETF XLU, companies like Southern Company, which have pulled way back in price and now yield over 5%. I think that those are getting very interesting at this point. We've got a call from Harriet who joins us. Well, how can we help, Harriet?
We had purchased some EE bonds in 86. The rates were like 7% then. And they are coming due because it's almost 30 years. And we're thinking we have 3 grandchildren. They're probably worth somewhere in the $30,000 range. And we were thinking we want to, as I understand it, we want to avoid paying the federal tax by cashing in, but maybe transfer them to the 3 grandchildren.
Well, okay, so remember, you're not going to avoid the tax, obviously, by you cashing them in, because if you cash them in, then you've got the ordinary income, right?
Right.
But if you're going to go to, if you go to Treasury, and you've probably done this, and this is why you're probably calling, because it's not 100% clear, but as I'm talking here, I'm going to treasurydirect.gov.
Yep.
And there's a whole section about transferring securities, and they really clearly state that if the owner of a double E bond or an I bond for that matter, if you wanted, you can transfer to another person with a Treasury Direct account. So now you've got to wait 5 business days after the purchase to do so, but according to treasurydirect.gov and the website, you really shouldn't have a problem in the as far as just logistically giving the grandkids, getting it into their name. So, again, that's, I know it's not completely clear on here because you're, when do these mature?
It'll be 30 years next March in 2016.
In 2016. So you've got some time before they effectively stop earning interest. So from what I could tell here is, and again, remember here, if you're trying to be efficient about taxes and you're trying to make sure that you are doing the best things you can from a tax perspective on these double E bonds, remember that qualified education expenses are one way to avoid taxes when it comes to these double E bonds. So that's an issue. So if you end up hanging on to them, you could potentially pay for some qualified educational expenses as an idea.
Well, but I'm already paying something for one of them in college.
Already you're doing it. But are you using the double E's to do it?
No, I've just been taking money from my other money.
Well, so that's something that I'd talk to your CPA. Do you have a CPA, Harriet?
Yep.
Well, have you asked him?
No, we haven't. As a matter of fact, in just looking at the literature that I had looked at, I've collected some articles before I called you, I noticed that there's something about tax-free educational funds. I wasn't aware of that.
Well, right. So remember that. So for all those of you listening out there that have these double E bonds, just remember that qualified education expenses are the really, really the primary way to avoid taxes on these. But I think getting back to your question, Harriet, from what I can tell, at least logistically, when it comes to treasurydirect.gov and double E bonds, same for I bonds, it shouldn't be an issue to transfer these securities into the name of your children or your grandchildren. So I'd also definitely talk to your CPA about this too. Because there's potentially some other variables from an estate perspective, depending on what that looks like for you and your family, that you might want to also look at. But another resource, obviously, talk to your CPA about the taxable implications of that as well. And then you've got the gift implications. Remember, you can gift a certain level every year to your kids or your grandkids without having to file a gift tax return. You've got to look at it in that context as well. You're listening to Money Matters, straight ahead news, weather, traffic, then more of your calls and questions here on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
Dave joins us. Good morning. How's it going, man?
It goes well. Thank you.
It goes well. I like that. How can I help?
Yes. I'm just curious. I'm a federal employee, and I'm in the TSP, and I'm 64, and I hope to retire within 36 months. I'm wondering about the allocation that I need to have as far as the five different funds, if you have any recommendation.
So Dave, and for those listening to Dave, there's a lot of federal employees here in Atlanta. We've got CDC, we've got a lot of people that are involved in TSP, which is the Thrift Savings Plan. It's really a government version of a 401k. And it's really simple, and that's why I like TSP. It's low cost. And you've got five choices. You've got the I think of it as the television show CSI. You've got CSI, common, which are C for common large cap stocks, S for small cap, I for international. And then you have the G and the F fund, which are two bond funds, G for all government and F for, as in fixed income, where you have government bonds and then corporate as well. So it's a little more diversified. Are you doing a balance? Are you utilizing one of the life cycle options, Dave?
Which no. is
okay. See, I think you want to. I like the life cycle options on TSP, and they have. And the reason I like them is that it's a really nice balance depending on the year that you choose in the life cycle. I think where you stand today, I would have a balance no more, and this is just my opinion on your stage of the game. I've talked to a lot of people and families around your age. You really want to have about half in the G and the F fund, meaning that it might be 25% in each, because that gives you a buffer if the market gets really, really unruly a year or two before you end up retiring. So you might want to look at the L income fund on the life cycle, L income, L 20, and those are just balances where you'll have 50% in GNF and then the rest spread out over CSI. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Stay tuned. News, weather, traffic straight ahead. Then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Bob joins us. Bob, what's going on? How can I help?
Yeah, good morning, Wes. Thanks for taking my call. Got a quick question for you. I have a couple of IRAs. Actually, it's my wife's IRA. And we are going to retire in about 3 years. And the money is going to be, when we retire, half of it's probably going to be in a Roth. And half of it's going to be in a traditional IRA. And this is actually going to be more of our play money. We have pensions and stuff like that. So this is money that we want to do, you know, trips with or anything special with. And I'm trying to balance a portfolio on it. And instead of you going 60-40 with stocks and bonds, I was wondering, since it's only 3 years away for the IRA portion of it, not the Roth, but the traditional IRA, is going 40% cash as opposed to 40% bonds, as it looks like the bond funds, if the rates go up, are going to be heading south.
Okay, so you touched on, you said quick question, yet there are probably 17 million pages of writing upon this very topic. Okay. Shouldn't I just go? And I think it's a really good point. In fact, I should probably write for my AJC blog on next week. I probably should do this exact question, which is, should I just go to cash as opposed to staying in bonds? Because we all know, and I've talked about it here on the show for years now, interest rates go up, the majority of bonds go down because it's a headwind. It's a seesaw relationship or inverse. Rates up, interest rates go up, and we know the Federal Reserve is manually about to start doing that, and then the marketplace does the rest. Interest rates go up, price of my bonds go down. But just like that same seesaw analogy, if you think about it, if you're way out on the edge of the seesaw and equate that to a 30-year bond, that's the longest type of bond we can have. Well, actually, I believe Mexico just issued some 100-year bonds. You don't want to get caught in those. Who knows where Mexico will be in 100 years? Who knows where any of us will be in 100 years? But if you think about the relationship, it's really long-term bonds, Bob, that are going to be in a bear market when rates go up. So it's, if you're on the fulcrum, if you're on the very, if you're on the fulcrum of that seesaw right in the middle, there's not a whole lot of movement. So your bond, your really shorter term bonds don't have the same impact of this whole rates up, prices down. So I would say, and again, there's more to this, and I want to, before I forget, I want to tell you this. Timing the bond, if you think timing the stock market is difficult, try timing the bond market. It's even worse. It's even more difficult. So I think of it as positioning ourselves, knowing that rates are going to go up. There are bonds that are close to that fulcrum, or floating rate bonds that get off the seesaw and don't participate in that inverse relationship. We'll talk more about that. That are going to be fine. You'll collect your 2 or 3 or 4%, and you're not going to have to worry about a huge downdraft in price. And I still think over time, those are better investments than cash, particularly if we have the patience to be in them for, in your case, you said 3 years. So you've opened up a can of worms, Bob. You've given me my next blog topic. I thank you for that. And we'll continue on the show here. Whitney joins us on the line. How can I help? What's going on?
Good morning. I've got kind of a multiple question here, but what percentage of a portfolio do you recommend be invested in indexed annuities? Are there any companies that you recommend? And also, I've been told that it's guaranteed that it'll be there in 3 to 10 years when I start drawing it out. And do you think it's really safe? Guaranteed is a tough word to hear.
It is. It really is. It's a scary word in anything finance related. And I almost thought this is a trick question for a second. You said to me, What percentage do you think you should have in index annuities, Whitney? And that's a fair question. I think it's a fair question. If you've heard my opinion on these products, you'd remember that my recommended percentage in index annuities is zero, because I think that they are absolute, they're junk, in my opinion. And they're junk for a lot of reasons. And I've actually written about this a couple different times. And I get pushed. If you sell index annuities, you hate me saying this, right? Uh-huh. And I've actually had video responses of when I did an article for AJC, and I've done a lot of different. I've done many pieces about index annuities, but and I've gotten lots of. If somebody responds to me about this, it's because they sell index annuities, and these are huge commission products. And they're very tricky products, and the problem I think with them, and you they don't go away because they pay so much in commissions to the guys that sell them, the people that sell them, that they're always gonna stick around, because there's always this huge incentive to get these products out there, and they're issued by these big insurance companies. You and I, Whitney, both know that the vast majority that insurance companies don't insure something, or they don't quote guarantee something, unless they know they're going to win. At least they know they're going to win in the vast majority of cases.
Okay.
Sure, there's cases where insurance companies will lose, and that's why we have insurance, and it's important. But when it comes to investing, the way these products are structured, to say that they're guaranteed and they say that you're going to get the market upside and you never have any risk in them, is really just misleading. At least the way I think of it is misleading, because fundamentally, insurance companies are just publicly traded companies, or some of them are private, some are public. They are just, there's no real a guarantee. Lehman Brothers guaranteed their bonds, right? They guaranteed that they were going to pay you as long as they're in business. Companies were going to pay you as long as they're around. It's just like insurance companies. They're going to pay you. A guarantee is really only a guarantee if it comes from a government entity. And then obviously that's suspect. If you look at imagine what those who were getting a Greek guarantee look like right now with those bonds, right? So the only real guarantee is a government treasury, is a U.S. government treasury. You could make the case for German treasury bonds as well, which are, let's say they actually have a higher credit rating than the U.S. But I can't ever take with real seriousness an insurance company that says guarantee. Look at what happened with AIG back in the financial crisis, is that if it weren't for government bailouts, investors would have lost every single penny in that stock. And they lost a tremendous amount because they were on the brink of bankruptcy, because they made, guess what, too many guarantees. And that's the worry, I think, with these index annuities, is that on paper, they say, look, as long as you stay in this product for 6 years, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years, some of them I've seen 10-year surrender period. So you're guaranteed your money back after a full 10 years as long as you stay in the product. And what's so funny about that is that you could invest in almost any period of time, good, bad, ugly, in almost any publicly traded investment. And as long as you have the fortitude to stay with it for a full decade, very, very rarely can you find a place where you're going to lose money. If you have the fortitude to stay a full 10 years. What an index annuity is doing to you is it's kind of forcing you to stay in a product. And they know, hey, well, we know over 10 years we're going to make money with Whitney's money, so we can at least guarantee her that she's not going to lose over 10 years. And that just becomes a really bad deal for investors. It's kind of like paying somebody to put you in handcuffs and throw you in jail just so you don't ever break your arm. It's effectively what you're doing buying. I think when people buy index annuities, that's the sales pitch they're falling for. They think, oh, guaranteed, I participate in the stock market, which, oh, by the way, you don't. They say you do, that you correlate to a stock market, but they don't actually invest the money in the stock market. And some people actually like that. They're, oh, well, good, I don't want to be in the market. My thought is that if you're going to do something where you're investing a piece, and this goes back to your original question, Whitney, how much do you put in one of these really safe products? I say that take 10 or 15 or 20% of your investments, and if you want to keep that part completely safe, just do government treasuries. Just do treasury, good old-fashioned short-term government treasury bonds or really short-term government treasury or high-quality corporate bond ETFs. That is likely as safe as, I think it's much more safe and diversified than going out and betting 100 grand on one insurance company that could be gone in 5 or 10 years from now. That's a long time. So again, I think that there are a lot of smoke and mirrors that goes around with these products. They get promoted and advertised all the time, and I think they're super misleading for investors. So I'm obviously not a big fan of them at all, and I'm glad you brought up the point, Whitney.
Yeah, I am too. This has been of great value to me. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate all the detail that you went into because you touched on a lot of other points that are important to me. The other question, well, you said that you have some information, and unfortunately I didn't hear those particular days when you talked about annuities. Are there any dates or anything that you can, well, you know what? It doesn't matter. I think you've given me.
Well, good. Well, and here's what I'll do too. So Facebook, Wes Moss Money Matters is on Facebook. Is the page where I post things. I will put a link. I'll put a link on Wes Moss Money Matters to some of these annuity articles I've written. Enjoy the Sunday, Whitney. Appreciate the call.
You're back to Wes Moss of the money and investing advice you need.
We probably have time for one more quick question for this hour. Tommy, how can we help?
Hey, Wes. I've had this money manager in North Carolina for about 20 years, and he notified us about couple of weeks ago that he's selling the business out to his associates there that are with him, and he's going to be there, he says, for five more years.
Sounds like the guy's buying a boat, Tommy.
I think he is. I think he's hit the good times, but I've actually had this happen one other time with a firm that I was using down in Naples, Florida, and Legg Mason bought them, and it didn't end up very pretty. So I just didn't know if I should already, I just hate to cash that account out because of the capital gains that are in there embedded. Maybe that won't be a problem if we have a big hit. But anyway.
It reminds me of the complication between correlation, causation, and coincidentality, if you will. And the reality here is that when the Legg Mason, let's say, bought the money manager that you're talking about, and I think I know what you're referring to.
Right.
Part of the reason things went south there was really just the timing of the market.
Right.
So, and
right.
Now there's some correlation because a lot of times these mergers, Tommy, happen. And what you're referring to is a little different than a big firm buying another big money manager. From what that sounds like, partners are just buying a guy out because he wants to retire. I don't think that's the end of the world. When we start seeing these mergers and these purchases that are for a whole lot of money, we do start to see market tops. So there is some correlation between that activity and then the market itself not doing well, and then the market itself not doing well is part of the reason that you saw underperformance. Straight ahead, more Money Matters in the 10 o'clock hour. Stay tuned with us here for more Money Matters on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.